Welcome to the Farm to Table Talk podcast, where we talk about our food system from what we eat to how it's grown. I'm your host, Roger Wasson. Today we have a chance to catch up with Miles McAvoy at the USDA. Miles is the Deputy Administrator for the National Organic Program. And it just seems really fitting to keep checking in on organics because they just keep growing and growing. Miles, welcome. I want to start off just by asking you, is this percentage of organic products is still small, but does there seem to be any slowing of the growth and demand for organics?
No, there doesn't seem to be any slowing in growth. The growth is very strong, both in the U.S. and foreign markets as well. One of the things that's very interesting is the Mexican organic market is growing by leaps and bounds. So our exports of organic products to Mexico are growing. They have new regulations that are going into effect in Mexico. We're working very closely with the Mexican government to help them in the implementation of those regulations to provide effective control and oversight there. The growth is very similar in the U.S. in terms of a very strong market. A lot of new farmers are getting involved in organic production, so the number of certified organic operations in the U.S. Grew significantly from 2014 to 2015, and reports from certifiers are that there's a lot of new applications coming in for both handlers and farmers that are interested in getting into the organic market.
Well, you raise an interesting point, and that is that organic really is an international market right now. And I hadn't really thought of it until just a minute ago when you explained that you were working with Mexico. I tend to look at products coming into the United States, and you're wondering whether their organic standards are really matching up with ours. But where our products going out, exported out like that, I never really thought about how you would have to, in perhaps each of those cases, satisfy those countries of what our procedures are and what our organic standards mean. Is that the sort of thing that you're in with Mexico and maybe facing with other countries that would be importing organic products?
Yeah, well, our primary mission is to protect the integrity of organic products, whether they're produced domestically or imported from foreign countries. So we verify that imports meet organic USDA organic standards through a variety of methods. We do audits of the certifiers operating in foreign countries. So our auditors are all over the world doing those audits of those certifiers to ensure that they're doing their job properly and that the products meet the USDA organic standards. But with many countries, there are they've developed their own regulatory schemes to oversee the organic sector. So they have control systems, accreditation, certification, and standards, and that's both to monitor and control the internal market, whether it's in India or Canada or New Zealand or Europe. But also for the export opportunities that the farmers have for this international trade in organic products.
Well, I would imagine that around the world then, that some of them are kind of in their freshman year and some of them are in grad school. Like, right. So you have to adjust to whatever stage they are in bringing on their own organic standards. Has this been led by Europe? The image I have is that most of Europe, most of Western Europe, were early adapters of organics. Is that a true impression?
Well, the U.S. and Europe would be the early adapters of organic practices. So organic regulations came into effect through the European Union in the early 90s, so about the same time frame that the Organic Food Production Act was passed by the U.S. Congress. So the U.S. and Europe are kind of the leaders in terms of standards. They're the largest markets, so more than 90% of the world market for organic food products are in either the European Union or the U.S. So therefore, other countries look at the European and the U.S. standards as the standard that they need to meet in order to sell their products into those markets. So definitely are Europe and the U.S. are the leaders on standards. The standards between the U.S. and Europe are very similar on crops, a little bit different principles on organic livestock production, but we do have an equivalency arrangement with Europe to say that the standards are functionally equivalent.
Well, let's talk about the livestock production, because UCLR evolving, I guess, or our program is still evolving. They had guidelines that were set up initially, and then there continue to be some modifications. And recently it's been, I'm not sure where we are in the process, but recently there's been some changes started on livestock production for organic standards. Could you explain what those are?
Yeah, so in the Organic Food Production Act that was passed by Congress in 1990, there were provisions around organic livestock, but it wasn't very well defined. So they directed USDA to develop further practice standards or definitions of the practices for organic livestock through recommendations from the National Organic Standards Board and notice and comment rulemaking. And so the National Organic Standards Board has made a number of recommendations on organic livestock and poultry practices over the years. There's been, I think, 9 recommendations that they have made. Most recently, the most comprehensive one was in 2011 on animal welfare. And for USDA, we've put in place many of those practices. In 2010, there was the pasture rule that was implemented that required all ruminant operations, dairy and cattle, to be pasture-based. So there's a measurement to ensure that during the grazing season, those organic livestock operations are providing a significant amount of the feed from the animals grazing on pasture. So we also had a report from the Office of the Inspector General in 2010 that outlined the inconsistencies in terms of organic poultry practices in particular, that the requirement is that organic poultry has to have access to the outdoors, but what that specifically means in a regulatory framework is has been variable depending upon the certifier. So based on the OIG report, the National Organic Standards Board recommendations, stakeholder input, we've put out a proposed rule in April that's currently open for public comment on organic livestock and poultry practices. And what that does is it proposes to clarify the physical alterations that are allowed and prohibited. It clarifies some of the mammalian living conditions components, but the major proposed changes are around the living conditions for poultry, specifying space requirements for both the indoor area for organic poultry production and as well as the outdoor area for organic poultry.
Well, let's back up just a second, because initially you said that it covered ruminant animals, and that kind of makes sense because you were talking about needing to have cattle and sheep and goats be able to graze, and they are able to graze outside. Not so much for pigs and chickens, and a lot of the movement seems to be on perceived comfort of the animals, and that how much they're at least able to go outside started out as not being in small cages. But now that they can go out and exercise, peck around in the dirt, it's a more natural environment. It's perceived, at least, to be a more natural environment for them. Is it that sort of thing with these new standards of trying to accomplish not having the animals cooped up, literally, if you will? Is that what's kind of driven this? This suggestion, this recommendation?
Well, the recommendation from the National Organic Standards Board was that outdoor space for all organic livestock and poultry should be significant. It's a fundamental principle for organic production that the birds or the animals are outside conducting their natural behavior while they are outside, that's part of their natural organic condition is to be foraging outdoors. So for a ruminant animal, a dairy animal, it's grazing. For a poultry animal, it's pecking and scratching in the dirt and the vegetation, eating grubs and things like that as they forage about in the outdoor areas. So that's always been a fundamental part of organic principles. So what this proposal does is specify more specifically what are those space requirements, what do producers have to do in terms of providing access through the doors from the house to the outdoor areas. We propose that there has to be an enriched environment so that the birds have something interesting to do when they're outside. That we propose temperature ranges of when the birds have to be have access to the outdoors between 40 degrees Fahrenheit and 90 degrees Fahrenheit. So if it's below 40, then they can be confined. If it's above 90, they can be confined. But otherwise, they need to be able to go outside and forage in those outdoor areas.
What about pigs? Where do pigs fit into this?
Yeah, the proposed rule does again require outdoor, well, the current standards require outdoor access for pigs and swine, and that the outdoor areas has to consist of soil or areas with vegetation that have soil so that the pigs can exhibit their natural behavior, rooting behavior.
It's because I remember that, you know, usually you would have like a cement floor even in a barn that there'd be straw on it, but they must be able to go out into an open lot then, apparently.
Right.
Well, one of the things that this brings up is that there are a lot of marketers that are making claims now about how their food is produced, certainly, but the animals. And one that I get really perplexed about are the ones that are claiming that the happiness, and it's even on some of the packaging, it's called, you know, something like happy eggs or happy from happy chickens, and there were campaigns about happy cows. I mean, is there any scientific agreement on what makes an animal happy?
That's beyond the scope of what we're looking at. We're looking at organic. So that's what we regulate here is the use of the term organic on food products. So if they want to make an organic claim, then they have to comply with the USDA organic regulations, and we ensure that they meet those particular standards.
So where does this fit? How would you paint this picture of a mosaic, if you will, of the organic standards? And then you have all these other kind of claims that companies on their own are saying that they're pasture-raised or that they are cage-free or, you know, and then you've got the organic standard. I mean, where do you fit yourself, this program, into that kind of sea of marketing claims about how livestock are treated?
Well, organic is a very popular labeling claim. It's about 5% of food sales in the U.S. And so if a farmer or a business wants to make an organic claim, they need to comply with those requirements. So it's probably the most popular, the most recognized claim in the marketplace in terms of the types of claims that you were referring to. People know what it means in general. They have a very positive attributes to products that are labeled as organic. There's the verification, the USDA seal, very widely recognized. So that's what our job is to protect that integrity of that seal.
I'm just curious in this whole process, though. Why do some people, if they want to be able to talk about the production practice, why wouldn't they just go to organic production? Is it a cost issue that it costs them more to either comply and they can either claim happiness or make some other unsubstantiated claim perhaps about pasture raised and so forth and not have the expense and time of actually going through real certification as you have to do with organic?
Well, we have a very active compliance and enforcement division that gets complaints about operations trying to make organic claims without certification. And so we have some information of why those operations are trying to make the claims is because there's a lot of value in an organic claim, and why they're trying to avoid it. And one of the reasons is cost, is that they don't want to go through the cost, not just the direct cost of certification, but the cost of setting up their systems and complying with the record-keeping requirements and complying with all the standards. So we find that many of these, they tend to be smaller operations that are doing some direct marketing channel claims. They want to make an organic claim, but they're actually not in compliance with all of the organic standards. So in those cases, they have to stop making an organic claim or obtain certification so they can meet the organic requirements, and then they can label their products as organic.
I'm just curious whether there are any ramifications for all these other certifying type of organizations. There's some that are certifying different types of humane production and so forth. Do you think that there's any ramifications of these new kind of enhanced guidelines, regulations for the organic program and the way livestock is produced? Do that have any implications for these other types of certifying organizations that are out there right now?
Well, it may, and that's why we've put out the proposed rule for public comment. So we're taking that public comment through June 13th, and we look forward to the comments that may be provided by those organizations. What we have heard in the comments coming in through the National Organic Standards Board process is that many of the organic producers have these additional claims through American Humane or Certified Certified Humane, these different animal welfare programs. So they're interested in the organic standards meeting those requirements so that organic is at least equivalent to those standards and they don't need those additional labeling claims.
Well, obviously the USDA is standing behind the organic standards and these organic programs, and you know keep making improvements like you were just talking about with the livestock production guidelines, or I guess regulations that were going to be going into the program. How do you feel that it's going as far as letting the consumer understanding what organic really stands for? I know the industry is talking about creating a checkoff program. Because there tends to be some people, at least in the industry, that feel that people don't understand organics enough, and that the industry has to do more to explain. Because, you know, we're talking here this morning, we're talking about a dimension that many people wouldn't know about if we wouldn't talk about it. But how goes it from where you sit as far as getting understanding by the American consumers of what organic really stands for?
Yeah, I think that a lot of consumers don't understand where food comes from, how food is produced. That's very understandable. They live in an urban environment. They might not be familiar with the way that crop production, livestock production occurs. But there's a lot of interest in the consumers in knowing where their food comes from and how it is produced. And so there's a lot of efforts going on. Through various organizations as well as at USDA to provide that information on both where the food comes from and how it is produced. So at USDA we have the initiative of Know Your Farmer, Know Your Food, which is all about recognizing the farms that are in your local area, understanding how food is produced, and supporting those local and regional growers. In the organic sector, we have a lot of information that we provide through presentations and fact sheets and conferences. We have what we call the Organic Literacy Initiative that just provides basic training on the standards and certification process, and over 30,000 USDA employees have taken that basic training so that there's that information out in the countryside so that all the field offices around the U.S. and around the world have that basic understanding of organic and can help to get that information out about what the standards are and the certification process. So there's a lot that needs to occur to get information out about food production in general.
Well, Maz, in wrapping up, I just want to point out, you've been in the industry for some time yourself, even before you came to Washington. You're one of the pioneers, really, in the organic industry. And I would imagine at each stage you're finding things that are either make you feel good about going ahead or you feel a little challenged from time to time. I'm curious, recently, what have you seen that gives you the most encouragement about where organics are in the United States today?
Well, I think the thing that gives me the most encouragement are always the conventional farmers that go into organic production, and they tend to be very skeptical when they start, and they usually start small with a part of their operation. And they learn how to grow crops organically and be successful in the production of it and then in the marketing of their crops. And they tend to be very, very excited adopters of organics because they come in as a skeptic and they go out as some of the major proponents. So that's always very, very exciting. Second, the things that we learn from organic production, the research, the practices that organic farmers are using, there's a lot of benefit in that to conventional agriculture as a whole, because some of those practices may be adopted to improve the practices on conventional farms as well. So there's a lot of sharing of information. It's not an either or. It's everybody that's in agriculture is really trying to work together to make it a better food production system. And then the last thing that I get really excited about is what's happening internationally and the growth of markets in Latin America, in India, in China. There's people all over the world that are very interested in organic food production and improving the way that food is produced all over the world. So that's, to me, is very exciting.
Well, that's a good way to wrap up. Really appreciate your taking the time and painting a picture, I think, that gives a lot of people some really feelings about being optimistic on the future of organics. I want to thank Miles McAvoy, the Deputy Administrator on the National Organic Program. Thank you, Miles.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks for joining the Farm to Table Talk podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe to listen regularly on SoundCloud or iTunes to Farm to Table Talk.